We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The terrific play-by-play voice of the Chicago Cubs, Len Casper, kind enough to join us from Cleveland on his day off every Monday at 3 on the McNeil and Parkin Show. Hi, Len.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Good, Len. Everything good with you, young man?
Yeah. An off day in Cleveland. It's about 70 degrees. And tomorrow, when we're scheduled to start our series, it'll be in the 40s and rain. So,
Cubs luck.
The only bad thing is it's an off day, but you kind of wish we were playing baseball today.
And the Cubs could certainly use some nice weather consistently. Man, that was a pretty eventful series for the Cubs over the weekend, wasn't it, Len?
Where do we start? Well, you guys tell me. Where should we start?
All right, let's start with the Javi Baez stuff. For anyone who didn't see, he's playing short for Addison Russell. DJ LeMahieu is at second base. Baez thinks that LeMahieu is trying to steal signs, which he was, and relay them to the batter. Baez thinks that that was part of the problem with Yu Darvish on Saturday. So Baez does something that Joe Maddon says he had never seen before, which is try to physically block LeMahieu, his vision towards the catcher. Arenado ends up striking out, so it seems like it works, but it led to guys chirping back and forth. Did you have any problem with what Javi Baez did?
No, I'd never seen it before. He claims, I guess, that Andrelton Simmons had done it in the World Baseball Classic, which I didn't see. I think it is an unintended consequence of the new mound visit rule. Guys probably don't want to change signs because they're afraid of wasting the precious mound visits. I think probably both guys were in the right. I think Baez and any defender has pretty much any right to play wherever he wants. And I think if you're DJ LeMahieu and you're not stealing signs, you're probably a little aggravated that a guy is doing that. So, I don't have a problem with guys having a disagreement. I was a little surprised. Vic Carapazza, I believe, was the second base umpire, went to Baez. I'm not sure why. I don't know that there's anything in the rule book that says he can't do what he did. And obviously he wants to be back in his defensive position when the pitch is being delivered. So, it ended up probably being much to do about nothing, but it certainly kind of fit the day. It was a bizarre game, to say the least.
It was uniqueier. And I'm a guy who believes in degrees of unique, which I heard you discussing.
Too.
Yeah. It was definitely uniqueier yesterday.
The Bryant pitch that scared the heck out of everybody. Fortunately, it got some of the helmet. He had sunglasses on. I think those two factors kind of saved him from a really bad injury. I will be curious, and hopefully he's back tomorrow, but might he consider the C-flap? That's the extender kind of protecting the jaw and the face that Jason Hayward has worn since he broke his jaw a few years ago. You've seen a few Cubs do it, and we've talked on the air before about some guys now wearing it before they ever get hit. Just because velocity now, you just can't get out of the way. And I have a feeling within 5 years, it's going to be like the visor is in hockey, that I think most guys are going to be wearing that C-flap.
Yeah, Albert Almora wears it. We're talking to Len Casper here on The Score. And Albert Almora, I said this in the 2 o'clock hour, Len, like, he is making the most of his opportunity, and it's great. I've just said it's a byproduct of the Cubs' depth, and not to dismiss Ian Happ so quickly. When people say, Almora, just pencil him in every day as your leadoff hitter and your center fielder, it's a little bit more complicated than that to me. Is it to you?
It's funny you say that, Danny, because I've been asked by a few people just in general, so is Almora the everyday leadoff guy now? And my answer is, well, for right now he is, but number one, Joe is going to get Happ into the rotation. When Ben Zobrist is not on the DL, he's got to play. And I think they're going to use everybody. And Happ in particular is a guy, because second-year big leaguer, you don't want him to be sitting a lot. You got to try to get him into a rhythm. So you know, I'm a big believer in Albert Almora Jr. And if we go back to when, you know, he was 20 years old, I've been touting him as a future everyday really good Major League Baseball player. And this may be the time when he's just deciding to grab the reins and is not going to let him go. But over the course of a long baseball season, things do tend to happen. And I do think Joe, you know, will continue to use Hap. But right now, you know, Almora 1, Baez 2, I think Joe's going to continue to ride the hot hand.
Yeah, I mean, Hap's got a big bag of gloves. Let him employ gloves. He can play more than center field. He can be a spot infielder if you need him to. Right now, I don't know how you take Almora out, though.
Don't. I'm with you. And, you know, I think we tend to extrapolate, you know, based on a week or 10 days and say, well, this is what it's going to look like the rest of the year. I use an example of Chris Bryant talking to people in spring training and talking to him. He didn't play the outfield in spring. And I theorized that he'd probably play 10 to 12 games in the outfield this year just because that's what happens during a baseball season. And, of course, he got a start in right field this weekend. So things tend to happen, and you just adjust as needed.
How much better of a defensive player in center field do you consider Albert Almora versus Ian Happ?
I think in terms of pedigree, you would say definitely Almora, because it's been his position his whole life, would get a clear advantage. Happ doesn't always look smooth in terms of some of his routes, but I have to give Ian a lot of credit. For the most part, he makes the plays, and while it doesn't always look pretty, I have to give him pretty high marks for how he's adjusted to playing center field, but I definitely would give the advantage to Almora, and I think right now clearly he's feeling it. And you know, Albert just it's in his DNA. That's just what he does. You know, he can steal a home runaway. He's got great athleticism, and his instincts are off the charts.
Have you ever seen three highlight reel catches in one game before, Len?
Not by one guy.
Yeah, I can't remember it either.
Nope. No, that, you know, 4 in 2 days. I've never seen a performance quite like it.
Meanwhile, Kyle Schwarber continues to entertain. He's going to kill himself. Whether it's running into a fence at third, at first, lunging for the bag. That's the big question.
Max very worried about Kyle Schwarber.
He's too reckless for me.
Well, he plays like a football player, and
yes.
I like that. I don't mind it at all. And you know, he and Rizzo seem to be made of steel. And you know, knock on wood. But what I've just enjoyed is watching Schwarber make adjustments at the plate. He's using all fields now. And if that continues, look out. I feel like just a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, are you worried about Kyle's struggles? Well, if you look at the numbers now, it looks really good. And things change very quickly early in the season. You can go from batting 210 to 310 to 240 in a matter of about 3 days. But I really, really like that development. You know, the Schwarber, Almora, Baez, that, and I'll tell you, Jason Hayward, with
yep.
men on base, is batting about 400. Had a real tough day in right field, but was able to battle through it after losing that ball in the sun. He's been really good. Russell has kind of gone through a little bit of a downturn after a good start. It's just the cycles of baseball. Unfortunately, the Cubs now have 4 or 5 guys who seem to be carrying the mail.
We're talking to Len Casper on the McNeil and Parkins Show on The Score. This is officially a thing now with Yu Darvish, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I haven't seen him enough. You know, I've seen him in the past, but not consistently. So I feel like I'm still learning kind of what he's all about. And I would say a few things about Darvish. Number one, I think the one thing you guys cannot downplay is fastball command. You know, we could talk about the fifth inning and mechanical changes and all the other stuff that we see. But in terms of just from a baseball perspective, when he struggles, he can't throw his fastball over the plate. And that's about as basic as it sounds, but I think it's the root of any troubles he has. I think he threw maybe 4 or 5 fastballs that bounced in front of home plate the other night, and it's really hard to get people out when you're doing that. And I think when he walked the pitcher, that's another example of him just not being able to command the strike zone. You know, he misses bats, and as JD has talked a lot on our broadcasts about, you know, a lot of times guys end up fouling pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch. He does not want guys to put the ball in play. He wants to make a miss, and when they're fouling him off, that builds his pitch count. Now he's at 95 pitches in the fifth inning. I don't know why little things seem to throw him off, and if that's a pattern that will continue. But there are times when you hand a guy a 2 or 3 nothing lead in the fourth or fifth inning, and you say to him, it's your game, go win it. And we haven't seen him do that yet. So I think he needs one of those games to build some confidence. And I heard you earlier, Danny, saying, you know, it's amazing a guy with his track record and his numbers in his career, and he's basically been pitching in the big leagues since he was 19 years old, going back to his Japan days. But no matter how good you are, there are a lot of guys in this game who, you know, have those issues. It's a really, really hard game. And I think we just always assume that the best players are the most secure and the most comfortable and most confident.
Yeah.
Not always the case. And little things can rattle guys. And unfortunately, we've seen that happen a couple of times here with Yu Darvish.
What have you been able to glean about how the coaching staff and the skipper are communicating with Darvish?
Well, the one thing I can tell you that was noticeable is you notice he got rid of the hesitation in his delivery the other night. You know, the Jim Hickey and the staff, they kind of talked to him about simpler, better, to help him with his command. And he incorporated that on Saturday. You know, I don't think there's a language barrier. I think he speaks a lot of English. We go back to the meeting with Theo and Jed. He did not use an interpreter, for that meeting in Dallas. You know, I know his teammates like him a lot, and, you know, it's a new situation for him. So, you know, I think it will take just, you know, you don't know everybody in the group, and you're just trying to kind of get to know people. And so that takes time. But in terms of doing what he does every fifth day, you know, I think everyone's still kind of learning what makes him tick. And the other part of it is his repertoire. You know, he's been basically fastball slider. We occasionally see a curveball. You know, it didn't look to me like his split change really moved a whole lot the other day. But I think it's just kind of honing in on what do you do best, and let's utilize that and get people out.
A texter brought this up. I hadn't considered it. In terms of comfort, because like you said, there's always that stuff between the ears, and especially with him and his arsenal. Personal catcher? They had signed Chris Jimenez. Like, obviously, you want to play Contreras, but do you think that's something they'll consider?
I don't think they have considered it to this point. I suppose things could change down the road, but Wilson Contreras is a guy who probably, in an ideal world, is going to start about 130 games, and I don't think you'd love to go down the road of 30 times you have to start a backup catcher necessarily. Contreras, to me, is an all-star caliber guy, so you know you don't want to hurt the team overall. So I haven't heard that yet, but I suppose down the road I think anything's possible if struggles continue. Let me add, I don't think Contreras is part of the problem here. I think everyone agrees that, you know, Darvish has done it before and he'll do it again, hopefully, and it's the group to figure it out. But, yeah, maybe down the road it's a possibility if this continues.
Did you reach for the dump button yesterday, one you don't have, when your partner let an expletive out after Bryant got hit in the face?
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't hear it. He didn't mention it to me.
You didn't notice it?
Are you sure that's what he said?
Yeah.
We were pretty sure.
We're pretty sure.
We'll pull it. At first, I thought it was a crowd mic, but then our audio overloaded.
I thought it was JD.
Yeah. I know. When I heard it live, I was like, oh, my God, Chris Bryant's dead. So that's what our audio picked up.
You know what that sounded like to me? It sounded like a beep.
Yeah. He just came in with the old beep.
Maybe just throw coffee next time.
I swear to you guys, no pun intended, I did not hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But if he did say it, I'm giving him a pass.
Yep.
Because it took my breath away when it happened.
Yeah, it's frightening.
Is that fair?
Yeah, sure. What's the scariest thing you've ever seen on a baseball field when you were broadcasting?
Oh, man. Wow. When Lynn Bramer sang The Stretch.
All right.
No, that's about. I'm sure I could come up with something, but yesterday was not fun. I hope to not see that again.
Well, because we got Jason Benetti coming up in 15 minutes, and he was obviously broadcasting when Danny Farquhar was in the dugout and had the hemorrhage and the aneurysm in his brain. He literally almost died at the stadium. So it's just, as soon as Bryant got hit, I was like, oh, man, that's so scary. And it is. But then you think back to 48 hours before, and a guy has an aneurysm in the dugout, and the two things don't even compare.
Yeah, no, it just makes the game completely irrelevant, and you know, certainly keeping Danny in our thoughts and prayers. Say hi to Jason for me too.
We will. Enjoy your day off in Cleveland. Does going back to Cleveland, does that do anything for you? Obviously, sight of Game 7 and everything.
Yeah, we're going to reminisce a lot, I think, over the next 2 days. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, Len, thank you very much.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
See
you.
That's Len Casper, television voice of the Cubs.
So he didn't even notice JD with the expletive there. We thought it was JD.
Yeah. I
thought it was when I heard it.
Yeah, I feel like it would have made more noise like on like social media if he would have cursed, but maybe everyone was just so freaked out about Chris Bryant. But then
probably.
When Tanny played the audio, I was like, oh, yeah. That sounds like you let it go. I missed it live. We got Jason Benetti at 3:30. Another little unwritten rule thing that came out of Chicago baseball this weekend I want to run past you. And baseball just needs to lighten up, Francis. Just like across.
Forget all unwritten rules. Let's forget them all.
They
weren't written for a reason.
Yeah, that's a great solution to this problem. It's McNeil and Parkins on the score. Fox Sports Houston with the audio. We will talk to Jason Benetti coming up. In 5 minutes, the audio brought to you by Shell. Get the feeling of being rewarded with gold status at Shell with the Fuel Rewards program. Download the Fuel Rewards app, join, and start saving today. What's Major League Baseball's problem? Because if anyone didn't see this story, Justin Verlander...
Yeah, don't assume many people did.
Yeah, fair enough. Friday night, White Sox 10-0 losers to the Astros, saying of Tim Anderson... He steals on 3-0 in a 5-0 game. That's probably not great baseball. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. But he celebrated that, though, and it's like, hey, I'm not worried about you right now. It's 5-0. I'm giving a high leg kick. I know you can steal. If I don't want you to steal, I'll be a little bit more aware of you. But I'm trying to get this guy out at the plate. He kind of celebrates that at second base. I don't even know what he was celebrating. When asked about catching...
Which is a good point by Verlander.
Yeah, when asked about catching Tim Anderson with the pickoff, quote, another bad baseball play in my opinion, Verlander said of Anderson, very thankful that he gave me an out. That's what I said, and he didn't like that comment, but hey, that's not my fault. That's his fault. I'm not going to let the situation dictate what I do out there, and I'm going to slow everything down and do what veterans do, see the game, play the game, play the game the right way, end quote. I just... From Clint Hurdle... to talking about Baez, to DJ LeMahieu talking about Baez, to Verlander talking about Tim Anderson, to all of Major League Baseball last year having a problem with Bryce Harper and his Make Baseball Fun Again little campaign. It's that scene in Stripes. Lighten up, Francis. Like, it's just...
Why was Anderson celebrating, though? And what was he celebrating?
He broke up a no-hitter off of a Hall of Fame pitcher, I guess. I don't know, trying to rattle him, trying to pump up his team, try to inject a little bit of life.
I don't mind the steal. When you're down 5-0, you need a runner in scoring position. I got no problem with a steal.
Yeah.
I got problem with celebrating it.
There's been an initiative with Tim Anderson and the White Sox this year. When he gets on base, they want him to feel comfortable that he can steal at any time. It's part of building him up as a player, building his confidence up, things like that. So they want him to wreak havoc on the base pass for the other team, the opposing pitcher.
He leads the league in swipes.
You say, okay, you don't want him to celebrate. Who cares if he celebrates?
Well, when you're down 5-0, it looks pretty stupid.
It's a little silly, sure, but if...
Based on how the White Sox have performed in their last 10.
But you want them to always play hard.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's Ricky's game.
Right?
Yeah, or find a spot on the bench. Juan Moncada. Yoan.
It's just a weird balancing act that people play hard. Play with energy. But don't show anybody up. Don't play with too much energy.
I'm not so much into that. I've never been of that mindset. You know, it's like when it was made famous years ago in a bowl game when Auburn coach Pat Dye went for a kicked PAT and settled for a tie. And people complained to him afterwards that they didn't want us kicking the PAT. They should have blocked the GD thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's
no
how
tie,
I felt
die.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... I guess that is an old reference to bring into the equation, but I see what you're saying. It's just, I don't know, like, baseball specifically has a really tough time attracting young viewers. And so many of these stories are about old people being mad about young people having fun playing a game.
He doesn't respect the game.
It's just so weird. Like, yeah. Relax. Like, okay.
I agree.
He flipped his bat. Okay, he pumped his fist. Okay, it's a little silly. Oh, you know, like, whatever. Like, the World Baseball Classic really stuck with me. Not because I cared at all who won or that right. I watched many of it. But whenever you tuned in.
There was energy.
Honestly, Mac, there was more energy than a lot of World Series games. Certainly than a lot of NLCS and ALCS games. In the crowd, on the field. Like, players have said, like, oh, that was as big as winning a champion. Like, people who won the World Baseball Classic mm-hmm. have compared it to winning a World Series. Mm-hmm. And I know that some of that's national pride, but it's also, like, when you watch, it feels big. The crowd's invested. They're chanting. They're cheering. The players are playing to the crowd and vice versa. There's heckling. There's all sorts of things going on. Like, why is America the place where we don't allow fun in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I don't care for it either. I'm all for guys having fun and celebrating. You don't like it, get them out.
Do you think baseball would have an attendance problem if going to a baseball game was like going to a soccer game in Europe with chants and cheering and all sorts of crowd engagement? It'd be way better. So just get off your high horse, Justin Verlander. Audio from NBC Sports Chicago, Chuck Garfine and Jason Benetti. Jason Benetti going to join us right now on McNeil and Parkins. Talked to Len Casper earlier in the hour. We'll talk to the White Sox play-by-play broadcaster now. How's it going, Jason?
I'm good. That clip is sobering, but I'm good. I hope you guys are.
Yeah, nasty weekend. Nothing good about it from anything. And baseball's just baseball, but I know you got to know Danny Farquhar a little bit, and I'm sure you're just as concerned as most in the organization.
Yeah, I've heard some positive things about his recovery, but what struck me on Saturday at the ballpark was you go down to the clubhouse and you go down to the batting cage and you have all of these conversations about mortality that you never have. Mm. Baseball is supposed to guide you away from that. And the other component is, you know, we watch so many games, right? You watch a football game and we immediately have an opinion on whether or not that receiver dragged his toe on the sideline to catch a pass. Like, we have that nuanced of an understanding of these athletic movements because the achievements are so small and successful and important. Every small athletic move means something to all of us playing or watching. And then you have the body basically rebel against somebody who's refined that so in such a detailed way that it's difficult to reconcile that can happen both to the same person.
No, that's a really good point and well said. I was interested, Jason, in the mechanics of doing that broadcast and covering that event because there's a game going on, but you don't know. This is a literal life or death situation. I'm curious, like, behind the scenes, decisions about what to pass along, when to pass it along. Was it tough to focus? Like, can you take us behind the broadcast of the incident with Danny Farquhar?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful we have somebody with such an understanding of reporting like Chuck Garfine. Chuck is so good and so dedicated to the craft and so interested in getting it right that I wasn't going to say anything until Chuck reported it. That's his job, and I would be guessing, no matter how many people in the organization I could text during the break or whatever, I would be guessing as compared to what Chuck can get roving the stadium. So we had talked about it in talkback while the game was going on. Keon Dolichahi and our producer and I have that communication. And I basically said, he said, well, Chuck's saying this. I said, go to him because I don't want to say anything for Chuck. Then Chuck reported it and I repeated it later, basically verbatim what Chuck had said. But we simply saw our first look at it was EMT in the dugout. And my mind immediately went to worst case scenario.
Sure.
Because you don't want to say something that's insensitive to the worst case scenario. And I actually, it's really strange to say this, but I credit both journalism school, but also the fact that when I was a freshman at Syracuse University, the Syracuse is playing a non-conference game, one of the first games I ever went to, and an official passed out on the field and eventually died. During the day. I mean, at the game, he passed out. It was a heart attack and eventually died. So I haven't been on the air for something like that, but I've seen it. And so I think, you know, just by virtue of watching a lot of sports, you get this understanding that something really terrible can happen, even if you're just supposed to be enjoying the game. And that's the backdrop of what I was seeing that day.
Let's talk a little baseball as well, Jason. The Astros pitchers, well, they're world champions. But going back to, I guess you'd say, that one-game series against the Twins is where the slide really began. Trevor Cahill was Catfish Cahill last Tuesday. I mean, what the hell is going on with the White Sox bats?
I go back to Dennis Green. You know, they are who we thought they were, or whatever that phrase. We all knew going into this season, and I heard you guys talking about it earlier, that there was a good rating for that home opener, and there was a great crowd, and there was all this positivity before the season. But I think if you polled fans and said, what is your positivity directed most toward, their answer would be 2019 or 2020. Because that's what Rick Hahn has been very open about, and Kenny Williams as well. And it's very interesting that baseball is meant to grind you down as both a player and a fan and executive and announcer and somebody who criticizes the team. Like, that's what's supposed to happen in baseball. You open 3-2 and then win one game after that, and it's suddenly that you know, the earth has opened and tried to suck you in. And I'm not advocating for blindly staying the course. Don't get me wrong, because I think that's what the alternative looks like, is that, you know, it's just rose-colored glasses no matter what. That series was not good. It was the defending champs, but the series was not good. And you'd want the last game in Oakland, and those first two in Oakland weren't good either. But the other component of this is, I don't know that anyone would say it's completely unexpected that this would be a very uneven start to the season. So where I stand on it is, let's let some time elapse, and then we can further make judgments.
Talking to Jason Benetti here on The Score, do you think Yoan Moncada really had a tight hamstring?
I think Ricky Renteria has made it clear that if you don't run like he wants you to run, he's going to pull you out of the game. I think that scenario with Moncada could have been one of a couple things, but I would not rule out, and we were very honest about it on the broadcast, about what we thought we were seeing, and Steve and I both thought that he got pulled because he didn't run out that ball like he should have, according to Ricky Renteria. Now, Ricky defends his guys, and I think that's a good quality 99% of the time, and maybe even in this spot. However, I think the evidence of our shot into the dugout of Moncada when he came out drinking Gatorade and not having Herm Schneider near him is a suggestion that there's a chance that it was first what we thought and not second what was there.
See, that's the kind of thing White Sox fans like me are put off by, Jason. It's the lack of hustle. It's the stupidity. Sanchez getting thrown out at third, making the third out at third last week, and the complete absence of ability to get runs in scoring position across the plate.
Those are separate matters, though. Like, do you think there is a lack of hustle with this team?
Well, that's why he got sat, right?
Oh, but that's one instance, I would say. Are there six or seven more that you're thinking of?
No,
because honestly,
no.
In spring training, my feeling was, and we said this, my feeling was the Sox were playing harder than most of the other teams in spring training.
Yeah.
Now, if that doesn't, that's good, and that's all well and good at spring training. But my feeling is that there's no lack of hustle across the board with this team. And I we'll see by the end of the year, but my feeling is that's one instance more of an outlier than anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would not dispute that. It's just the collective doesn't feel good when you see zero after zero after zero.
Oh, I get that. Look, it's not fun for me. Like, it's not fun for any of us involved in covering the team. All you can say about that is it's a week of the season. And if there are six more of those weeks, then everybody is going to have at it. But I until it becomes a trend of more than a week and a half even, I would say, especially in a year that is dedicated to a rebuild, mm-hmm. I would say that better moments are ahead, and I can pretty safely claim that.
Jason Benetti with us on The Score. Do you think Tim Anderson did anything wrong in that back and forth with Justin Verlander?
I don't, but I'm not one for unwritten baseball rules.
Yeah, me neither.
Like, I don't want to hit a dude in the head.
Right, but that's a written rule. You get thrown out of the game if you headhunt.
Right, but it's an unwritten rule that you got to protect your guys. I think do it in your own way. Look, the Super Bowl was 26-7. The biggest game in America was 26-7. And the team with 7 won. 5-0 in the fifth. You think you can take a base? Take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. You don't like it? Throw them out.
Yeah. And frankly, if you don't like it, get the other guys out. Use it as motivation. Like, I don't understand why people feel the need to speak about it other than they're being asked. But my answer would always be, well, I think my line speaks for itself, whether or not that it helped me get motivated extra for the next couple batters. Just
right.
Use it to your advantage.
Another question about Tim Anderson. Are you convinced, Jason, that he is an everyday shortstop?
Oh, my goodness. The reason I say, oh, my goodness, is my answer is it's too early to tell. I feel like a magic eight ball. I just don't think there have been enough games to discount him at shortstop. The errors are higher than you'd want, like much higher last year for this season. I think he makes great strides when he's moving. And when he's stationary, there are some issues. People have seen that. But I also think that if you're going to dedicate to the rebuild and look toward 2019 and 20, we showed you what the Astros did in terms of their down years, and it was three straight below 60-win seasons. If you take Chris Devinsky those years in the minors and you say, well, is he going to be a big part of our bullpen, and he's got a 404 in double A, your answer is probably no. So I bias toward giving people the benefit of the doubt until you really have to make a decision. And the Sox are not in a point in this rebuild where they have to make a final choice on anybody right now.
Okay.
And that's a benefit.
Jason Benetti, the terrific broadcaster for the Chicago White Sox. We appreciate the time, man.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you. That's Jason Benetti.
Could
with
be
us.
Worse. He could be doing the Reds.
Yeah. No bad and no plan.
Right.
Yeah. I'd
right.
rather be bad with a plan.
Yeah. Jim Riggleman hasn't won yet as interim manager.
We get to play the big voice guy game coming up.
Yeah.
Coming up at 4 o'clock. We're back well before that, though. It's McNeil and Parkins on The Score.
And Hawk is ranked Latin cold weather pitchers. Alex Fernandez tops on the list.
It's just going to be such a drastic change from Hawk to Jason Benetti. For White Sox, which I can't think of two more different individuals.
Let me tell you about Louis Tiant when it got cold. Jeez.
Yeah, I want to know. Like, that's a good follow-up question, right? Okay, so who's in your bottom five? Who's the seventh best Latin pitcher in the cold,
yeah.
Hawk?
Did Juan Marichal struggle when it was below 50?
Johnny Cueto really hated it.
Hawkeroo.
By the way, like I don't want to have a paralyzed vocal cord.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Right.
But the Slurpee diet that you are on looks really appealing. It brings
is.
Me back to seventh grade.
Yeah, I know, man. Like, just, and they're all sugared. I can't find a place in the neighborhood that has diet.
Yeah. Oh, so
which is a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. I remember just going. You go to the 7-Eleven after school, and you'd mix all the flavors together.
Did you get like the baseball players' cups?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Football players.
Yeah, they
cups.
Had the commemorative
yeah,
cups,
yeah.
And you could fill them up. You got the yeah. Coke, the blue raspberry, the cherry, the banana, the pina colada. It was amazing.
I always got the same guys, though. I always got stuck with Jim Plunkett.
Yeah.
I had more Jim Plunkett Slurpee cups than any kid should ever have had.
They did a base like a White Sox Cubs crosstown version of one. I remember the Frank Thomas one. I was like, man, it's the big hurt on my big gulp. Like, this is so cool. But yeah, it looks delicious and it helps.
They
right?
are delicious. It helps temporarily.
Temporarily. Yeah. It's gonna be a battle for you, but you're
doing
fighting.
The best I can, brother. You know that.
I know. Every day at a time, Mac. Every day at a time, or one day at a time, whatever it
is. Something like that.
Something like that is exactly right. We going to make a wager on the NBA playoffs?
I think we should. We're due.
I should have texted you. LeBron was was an underdog again. I made money personally.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I should.
We played him Thursday night and no good.
I know. Well, listen, they're going to struggle. I think this is going seven. I think they are a coin flip the rest of the way. The team isn't good. And so if LeBron plays otherworldly, they generally speaking win barely.
So that series resumes tonight?
No, it does. They got to 2-2 yesterday.
All right.
So
what's happening tonight?
Only two games tonight.
This man cannot live by White Sox Mariners alone.
No, we got the Fighting Timberwolves that have Derrick Rose, who had 17 off the bench in the last game. Timberwolves down 2-1 in the series, I believe. And then we got Thunder Jazz. So you can check out a Donovan Mitchell and a Russell Westbrook in the late night tilt on TNT if you want.
All right.
Or a little Houston Rockets Timberwolves action. I don't know if either of those scratch you where you itch, but I'll be watching.
No, I'll be watching the Blue Jackets try to make it a sixth game, try to take that thing one more.
Yeah.
The Capitals, if anybody's going to lose a lead in a series, it would be the Capitals. They have a rich history of failing when the calendar says April or May.
Are you enjoying your Stanley Cup playoffs?
What I've seen, I've enjoyed it, sure.
Okay,
yeah, the Bruins and Maple Leafs have had a good series.
I'm just saying, we could bring on...
You know what? The Golden Knights and Kings, even though it ended in four, it was a very close, very entertaining series.
Oh, a close sweep?
Yes, it was. I mean, as far as sweeps go, it was well played. Both teams played very well.
Sound like Joe Madden. That was the greatest shutout I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get swept, that's the way to do it.
Best sweep I ever saw? 2005 World Series.
Thank you, Hawk. A little bit of flair to our sweeps. All right, so this is what we're going to do. Tanny has the list of the 20 big voice promos for who the Bears have drafted. Tanny, do you have one that could whet people's appetite right now, if you will? Sorry, I'm throwing that at you here real quick. Or you could do it on the other side. And we're going to try to figure out who the Bears are going to draft according to our big voice guy coming up. Because I don't think that we could narrow it down. I think it's completely random and completely wide open. And I am now rooting for the Bears to draft someone that is not on Mitch Rosen's list of 20.
Yes, the second coming of Shea McClellan. I got him. I got him written down.
Okay, perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he's on my list of 22.
I got Mike McGlinchey.
So we're gonna figure this out as we go through it together, and we're gonna find who the Bears are gonna actually draft. Coming up next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.